Hey, Northeast Pennsylvania, it's Rob O'Donnell here on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. It is 307, 92 degrees, is that right? I guess it is, 92 degrees on this Tuesday, August 12th, 2025. How's everybody doing today? We got through Monday. Tuesday is going to be a breeze. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but this Friday will be the last sunset after 8 o'clock. Come Saturday, sunsets before 8 o'clock, 7:59. So make the best of this week. I know a little rain in the schedule tomorrow, but the rest of the week and the weekend looks nice. So get the rest of the summer in. Again, Friday is the last sunset beyond 8 o'clock, and then we start dipping the sun before that 8 o'clock hour and the 7 o'clock hour. So some things going on here before we get started with the normal course of business is Pennsylvania State Trooper Joe Pertinsky was released from Geisinger CMC Hospital today and was escorted home by his brethren. And it was great to see him walk out of there on his own two feet, surrounded by his brothers and sisters in blue, escorted him home. His family was waiting for him. His proud dad, chief of Mayfield Police Department, his brother, his girlfriend, who's also a Pennsylvania State Trooper, and all else, escorted him home. And it's good. I'm sure he's glad to be home. And thank you for your service, Trooper Pertinsky. And speedy recovery. Hope to see you back on that beat once you're good and ready and healed up. So both troopers now have been released from the hospital. That's a good sign. So that just happened today. That's some good news for us. I did see some stuff come across the wire. Newsmax picked it up and a couple of other news agencies. And I posted it about 3 hours ago. I posted it on my social media to where the Teamsters Union, led by General President Sean O'Brien, is signaling a more permanent realignment by donating to battleground Republicans in the upcoming midterms. Yes, for the second year in a row, the labor union's political arm donated to the Republican House campaign arm after nearly two decades of mostly backing Democrats. In addition to giving the NRCC, the National Republican House Committee, Teamsters doled out a combined $62,000 in contributions to nearly two dozen GOP congressional candidates in significant battleground districts, led off by Congressman Rob Bresnahan, Mike Kelly, and Brian Fitzpatrick in Pennsylvania, Pete Stauber and Tom Emmer in Minnesota, four representatives in New York, Jefferson Shreve in Indiana, four in Ohio, Republican congressmen in Ohio, two in New Jersey, one in North Carolina, one in Michigan, one in Utah, two in Illinois, one in Texas, and one in Florida. The group also gave this year's to GOP Senators Deb Fischer of Nebraska, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, John Housted of Ohio, and Dave McCormick of Pennsylvania. In a statement from the Teamsters spokeswoman, "Our members are working people whose interests cut across party lines," Kara Dennitz, a Teamster spokesperson, said. "And there is no value in living in a bubble where you only talk to certain people to the exclusion of others." So we're seeing a dynamic shift in politics across America. If things continue the way they are with voter registration in Pennsylvania, there is a very good chance that by Election Day, Pennsylvania will be a red state at the route that they are losing Democrat voters and gaining Republican voters. When you look at the map of counties and how their majority is here, Lackawanna County is the lone in the entire northeast quadrant of the state. And you have to look and say, well, if you compare Lackawanna finances to those other counties, kind of shows why. And maybe the proof should be in the pudding, as they like to say, to where maybe if you changed a little dynamics here in Lackawanna County, maybe we could do a little better. But that's up to the voters. And we'll see. It looks like it's leaning in that direction, but does it get there by Election Day? We'll see. And we'll see what the future brings. But to see the Teamsters after 2 decades, you know, focusing simply in one direction to start to shift, do they see the writing on the wall? That, you know, they have to spread their support around for what's best for their membership. So that's some things that came across today. And again, I posted that article. I also rehashed, and I think we're talking about it later today anyway, is, you know, the Washington Metro DC Police, the union head has come out. Like I said, I spoke to the union earlier yesterday, and they were in support of it. They've officially now come out in support of the Department of Justice taking over. It's interesting that there was a protest last night against the taking over of the DC Police Department, and there was a shooting at that protest. Talk about irony. But again, one of the things that's not being said is the DC Metro Police should have a contingency of about 3,500 officers, but currently hover around 27. And I heard some news reports that it's even less than that. So they are down 800 sworn officers. One of the reports I heard, it was over 900 sworn officers they are down. So sending 1,000 National Guard troops for logistics, administrative, and visual professional presence, because that's all they're going to do, is simply to give overworked and overburdened police personnel some breathing room to be able to go out and do the job that they're sworn to do. It's not like the National Guard is going to be doing enforcement action. Like I said, it's going to be administrative, logistical, precinct, security, visible, professional presence, and such like that. So one of the reasons, and I've seen it today finally starting to be said out loud, I even saw a few Democrats said about it. The reason they are pushing back on this so hard, and not just the politicians in D.C., but national, the House Minority Leadership, Hakeem Jeffries, and House Democrat members from across the country, and Democrat senators from across the country. The reason they are coming out so strong about this, and I've been told this from leaders in the FOP, leaders in the police union nationally, is that they are terrified that this works. They are terrified that this could become a blueprint, that you will have blue cities that are having similar issues around the nation and possibly red governors or blue governors that are just done with activating their National Guard and bringing them into cities across America if this works. So they are terrified that this could become a blueprint for something successful. So it's not about public safety. It's not about doing what's right for the populace, making it a safer environment for everyone. It's they are terrified that this works and it could spread to other cities across the nation. That is why this fight is happening so much. And this is coming direct from union leadership, the FOP, the National Association of Police Officers, and organizations nationally in law enforcement. They are saying that these politicians are terrified that this works. And, you know, there was a story from the AP. And, of course, here's the headline for the story from the Associated Press. And what would you expect from the Associated Press? Trump's Washington police takeover echoes history of racist narratives about urban crime. Of course it's racist if you're going to bring in the National Guard and federalize the local police, even though the local police department is cheering the move. Of course it's racist, but what they fail to tell you is the majority of the victims in urban crime are also people of color. So they're the ones who are going to benefit most from any increase in safety in these cities. And it's as simple as that. So it's laughable, but of course the Associated Press, of course mainstream media, has to tote a narrative that it must be racist that this is taking place. Of course it is, even though the victims are predominantly people of color in these urban environments as well. So it'll be interesting to see this goes forward. I believe there are going to be more protests today. There's the astroturfing, you know, let's pay for mobilization and get people bussed into these places again because they are terrified that this works. They're terrified that this will be beneficial for the safety of the people of these communities. That's what they are fighting. That's the only reason they care. Why else would they? Does it really affect any of them? No. The only downside for them is this works. And if it works, makes them look bad. And it also creates possibly a blueprint for other states to follow across the nation. Now, it would have to be governors in other states because Washington, D.C. falls under a different home rule charter where the president has the authority to do this. That is not the case in a lot of states, to where when it comes to policing in its cities, inner cities, it would more have to be coming from the governor, unless it's in a case of an emergency, which could also be the case here. We've seen if things get truly bad and out of hand, like we did see in 2020. So that's some of the stuff that's popping around outside here that's headed out there. So we can get more local now. This new Hilltop Heights affordable housing development planned for Scranton. Quandell's 36-unit development to be built on vacant portion of parcel, also housing Hilltop Manor Apartments. Now, there's a lot of controversy about this, and rightfully so. They are getting tax breaks for this, but you know they say, well, this is under the housing authority anyway, and it wouldn't be taxed to begin with. I saw some back and forth where they're saying it proposed 36 units of affordable housing. And I saw some comments that it's way more than that, but I can't find anything that shows it's way more than that. And all I could find is that this will create 36 modern apartments for families under the SHA, the Scranton Housing Authority. It's a 24.6-acre site. They have been given a 10-year tax abatement by the Lackawanna County. Now, Quandell is the company that's spearheading this, Quandell Enterprises, a project they are using through the firm Hilltop Heights LP. Will build on the vacant portion of the roughly 24.6-acre SHA, Scranton Housing Authority-owned parcel. And who's the director of business development for this Quandell? Well, that would be former Scranton Mayor Chris Daugherty. Says he hopes to break ground in the fall, with construction expected to take about 15 months. Commissioner Bill Gaughan and Chris Chermak approved last week a 10-year tax abatement for the Hilltop Heights under the Local Economic Revitalization Tax Assistance Program. The move exempts the development from county property taxes on new construction for a decade, after which the buildings would become taxable. The project also qualifies for the City of Scranton School District tax exemption, City Business Administrator Elaine Cipriani said. So it's not getting taxed by the county or the school district is losing out for 10 years. Now, Solicitor Donald Fredrickson of the county explained that the land itself is not taxable because it's owned by the Scranton Housing Authority. However, once the company builds these units and becomes taxable, he said, so we're going to give them 10 years of tax exemption under this program. But for the next 40 years, because they're doing a 50-year lease, the next 40 years, they'll be paying taxes on the improvement. But after that 50-year lease, it all goes back to the Scranton Housing Authority and therefore will not be taxed again. So in the long term, post 50 years, if you're nearsighted, all right, well, you're losing 10 years of taxes, you're getting 40 years of taxes, and then after that, it's going to the Scranton Housing Authority because that's the lease. It'll be turned over to them, and then it won't be taxed again, ever. They also received $350,000 from the city of Scranton in Federal American Rescue Plan Act home funds awarded through HUD. And the executive director of the Scranton Housing Authority, Carl Lynott, gave Mayor Paige Cognetti all the credit for this. Well, we'll see what kind of win this is. 34 families. They say low income. We've seen what kind of mess the Scranton Housing Authority's other properties are. Is this going to be a plus or a minus for the city of Scranton? Well, residents of the city of Scranton, you need to decide this. But for 10 years, they don't get taxed by the school district or the county. Then you'll have 40 years after that. And then after that, you will not have taxes. But you'll have 34 families living there that will, of course, some of them use school district assets, of course, use the county assets and not pay tax after that. So again, this is another parking authority type view where you think in the near future because, of course, the mayor and county commissioners and heads of authorities that are appointed by the mayor who will surely be replaced next time a mayor is in there really don't care what happens 40 years from now. And that's the lack of long-term structure here. And then you add in this Quandel director of business development, Chris Daugherty, the former Scranton mayor involved in this. And, well, you got Scranton politics at its best. So there you go. It's 3:23 here at WILK. We'll be back with the Rob O'Donnell Show. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. I'm going back and forth between the text message line here and my iPad on some stories coming out. Of course, the WNEP just ran a story. National Guard troops begin arriving amid Trump's Washington, D.C. takeover. And their narrative is the law lets Trump control the police department for a month, but how aggressive the federal presence will be and how it could play out remains open questions. Well, it's real simple how aggressive the federal presence can be. They cannot take direct law enforcement action, so they will be taking logistical administration and visibility roles. Other than that, they will not be doing day-to-day law enforcement. They will not be pulling people out of cars. They will not be performing traffic stops. They will not be doing any of that. Now, obviously, if a crime happens in front of them, they could do whatever any good Samaritan citizen does and hold and detain them and intervene at that. If they're attacked, they can obviously defend themselves. If someone's committing a crime in front of them, again, they can take the same actions any good Samaritan could do, which in a place like D.C., you'd be out of your mind if you do, because you would be the one to blame. We've seen that in cities like New York and other places. So, you know, it's interesting how they're trying to make this bigger than it is, again, because they are all terrified that this will be successful, that this will work. And crime will plummet during this 30 days, and they will say, hey, you know, this obviously is a model we can use to send a message. And listen, it's not hard. Once you send a message to the teen thugs who are committing the majority of the crimes in places like D.C., riding their ATVs and their motorbikes around and preying in packs of groups ages 12 to 17 on unsuspecting victims across the city, once they realize that it's no longer a free ride, once they realize that they will be held accountable, that they will be charged federally, it'll be a different outcome. They will move to places outside of the area because it'll no longer be a free-for-all. It will not be accepted, and it's just the way crime works. They'll attempt to move, and if they cannot move because it's just a dragnet anywhere they go, they will curtail the behavior for a while, until they are allowed to do it again, which in D.C. is probably inevitable. Also have some text messages here. Again, a text message come in. I don't think it's 36 units. I think it's 36 buildings with three units in each building. And just it's not the documentation I have. It very well could be. I heard as many as nine apartments per building, but I can't find anything that says that. Now, the specifics say 36 single-family apartments, and they did say it'll be flats, so all I can find in writing is that it's 36 single-family apartment units. So I cannot see it's any more than that. If anybody can point me in a direction where it seems to differ from that, let me know, and maybe we can ask some questions to get that clarified. But anything I find officially says 36 single-family apartments. Now, they will be one-, two-, and three-bedroom apartments. There's different income levels for the different size apartments and such, and different amounts that can occupy certain amount of apartments. And again, 36 apartments are not many for a city the size of Scranton. As a matter of fact, it's not even a dent in the issue, but it makes them look good on paper. And it's not their money, so why would they? You just have to look at all the players are involved, all the money and the tax breaks that are happening, and ask yourself the question, is this what's best? You know what? A growing tax base for the city of Scranton is what's best. People paying school district taxes, people paying county taxes, people paying city taxes, people who utilize the service doing that. And if you look at the housing developments within Scranton now, are they a benefit to the city or are they a burden on the city? Or are they a problem? Do they take extra police resources away from the rest of the city? These are things. And adding these developments, do you need to factor in, well, we're going to have to hire more police departments, more police officers. Is that factored into this? Because who's paying for it? They have a tax-free abatement for 10 years. So, again, the big picture is what costs the residents of Scranton money. But the politicians don't care because you really don't care about a stepping stone once you stepped on it and moved on. And you have to realize that, Scranton. You really do. These politicians are not here for the long term. Just look at the path they've taken. Look at the people before them, the path they've taken. This is a stepping stone. You are a stepping stone. They could care less about you. And that's going to become extremely evident over the next, I'd say, 8 months. Probably sooner, but the next 8 months, you are going to see just how much of a stepping stone you are and how hopefully stupid they think you are. Don't prove them right. Just like New York. New York's headed down a path they cannot turn away from. And it's going to be crippling as far as that city goes. Look at it. Some more text messages coming in. Rob, they have enough low-income housing projects in Southside. She wouldn't dream of putting one in her neighborhood, Rich. Well, it's never in their backyard. Come on, you know that. It's 3:32 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Of course, they always go back to January 6th and the insurrectionists, the only insurrection in the history of the world that was unarmed, by the way. So I got a text. 20-something people were arrested in D.C. last night. Do you think Trump will pardon any of them, like the January 6th insurrectionists? Well, to be factual, some were pardoned, some sentences were commuted. The ones that were found guilty of assaulting police officers had their sentences commuted, which means they were released from prison, but their sentences were not pardoned. So they still have records of assaulting law enforcement. That being said, I answered, you mean the January 6th when the chief of the Capitol Police requested the National Guard on January 3rd and was denied by the Speaker's office? And again, earlier in the day on January 6th, and was denied by the Sergeant of Arms via the Speaker of the House? Yeah, that just happened yesterday, too, where that came out. Nancy Pelosi, of course, wanted to chime in yesterday and says, Donald Trump delayed deploying the National Guard on January 6th when our Capitol was under a violent attack and lives were at stake. Well, only one life was at stake. It was an unarmed veteran who was shot by a law enforcement officer, the only police shooting of an unarmed civilian that had never went to a grand jury. Now he's activating the D.C. Guard to distract from his incompetent mishandling of tariffs, health care, education, and immigration. Well, immigration's doing phenomenal. I don't hear any schools complaining they have any negative effect health care. Yeah, once we get rid of the fraud, waste, and mismanagement, I think it's going to be a better place. Tariffs are working phenomenal. Bringing in tons of money. But the chief of the Capitol Police chimed in and actually reposted Nancy Pelosi's post about the National Guard. This is Chief Stephen Sund. He was the chief of the Capitol Police at the time of January 6th. He says, ma'am, it is long past time to be honest with the American people. On January 3rd, I requested National Guard assistance, but your sergeant-at-arms denied it under federal law 2 U.S.C. 1970. I was prohibited from calling them without specific approval. That same day, Carol Corbin at the Pentagon offered National Guard support, but I was forced to decline because I lacked the legal authority. On January 6th, while the Capitol was under attack, and despite my repeated calls, your sergeant-at-arms again denied my urgent request for over 70 agonizing minutes, running it up the chain for your approval. When I needed assistance, it was denied. Yet when it suited you, you ordered fencing topped with concertina wire that surrounded the Capitol with thousands of armed National Guard troops for a photo op. And that's coming from Chief Stephen Sund, the chief of the Capitol Police at that time of January 6th. So a little fact-checking there on the speaker. Now, if they would have had National Guard troops on January 3rd, like the chief of the Capitol Police had requested. Do you think it would happen if they got there 70 minutes earlier as requested on January 6th? Do you think it would have been what it was? Still not what everybody's making it out to be, but it's interesting that you're still running with the insurrection line here. The only insurrection in the history of the world that was unarmed, and the only victim was casualty death was an unarmed woman. So you keep running with your insurrection act. It's actually pretty pathetic at this point. It's 3:41 here at WILK. Time for the welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. I love when people try to discuss things they really have very limited knowledge about. Here's the thing. Trump did not pardon everyone involved with January 6th. It's just a fact. He pardoned a good majority of them. He pardoned the ones that were charged with simple trespass and disorderly conduct and such like that. And yes, I 100% agree with that being the case, especially with the videos that have come out, seeing that they're being let in and escorted around by Capitol Police and other law enforcement. Anyone who was charged with a felony assault on a police officer did not get a pardon. That's just a fact. Some of their sentences were commuted because they already spent over a year in jail. And in Washington, D.C., assaulting a police officer rarely gets a year in jail anywhere else but on January 6th in the Capitol. So if we're going to compare apples and apples and orange and oranges, you can't charge somebody simply because you don't like the event because of politics and the day it happened and who was in charge and who was involved, giving them 3 and 4 times the sentence you would normally give anyone else for committing the same crime. If you're okay with that, then that's fine. Let's go into Washington, D.C. right now, and any juvenile committing a felony, let's put them in jail for 5 years, and I guarantee you juvenile crime will stop. But that's not the way the law works. Will it work? It absolutely will work. But that's not the way the law works. So at least have your facts straight when you're trying to make an argument and make yourself look silly. So, yeah. People who were just convicted of trespassing, disorderly conduct, being on federal property without authorization, or whatever those bogus charges were, yeah, I think they all should have pardons. Absolutely. Because that whole thing was ridiculous. And I just proved to you from the chief of the Capitol Police that it could have all been prevented. But no, they wanted this to happen because they knew idiots like you would still be talking about it like it was some major 9/11 event. Pearl Harbor event in the United States. It wasn't even close. It was a mild riot at best. And you know what? They happen pretty much regularly in inner cities around the nation, especially in summertime. So there we go with that. Let's see now. Where was I? Let's go to, something here. Now, this argument came up today, too. Consumer prices rose 2.7 annually in July, which is lower than the expected 2.8%. Now, yes, inflation still goes up. Normal is 2.5 to 2.0. That's where economists like to see inflation. Inflation always happens. It's good for it to happen. If you have deflation, it's bad for the economy. So, yes. Anywhere from 2 to 2.5 is where economists like to see it. Now, it was 2.7, okay, a tick higher, but it was supposed to be at 2.8. So it was a good sign. That being said, you know, when you look at the past administration, 2.7, 2.6, I think, was the lowest in the 4 year of the Biden administration they ever had at inflation. Now, COVID. Well, okay, COVID was in effect for a couple of months before Biden took office and inflation wasn't there. Well, it took time to catch up. Okay, 4 years. And how all of a sudden, you know, after an election, did it start coming down? It didn't start coming down until the election happened and people knew there was hope on the horizon. Look at the monthly numbers of inflation. It started when the election, beginning of November, when people realized that the cavalry was coming and Biden or even more so Harris was not going to be in charge. So a 2.7 index. Now, for months now, since January, there's going to be a depression. Tariffs are going to cause the economy to crash. Well, now the answer is, we haven't caught up with tariffs yet. Companies are absorbing the tariffs. It's really not getting put on the people, which is still a concern. You know, there will be some ups and downs with tariffs, but for the most part, we've seen good things come out of the tariffs from the countries where agreements have come to. The amount of money that's been coming in, the billions and hundreds of billions of dollars that are coming in from the tariffs, just doesn't happen. The empty threats, the empty doom and gloom isn't happening. It's 3:50, time for the Bloomberg Money Minute. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. So I just looked into how much money has tariffs brought into the U.S. since January. Since January 2025, the U.S. tariff revenue has seen a significant surge due to new and increased tariff implementation by the Trump administration. Through July 2025, tariff revenue reached approximately $150 billion, with July alone generating a record $28 billion. This reflects 78% year-over-year increase for the first 5 months of 2025 compared to the same period in 2024. Through August 6th of 2025, the U.S. collected $128.4 billion in tariff revenue, 136.6 increase over the same period the previous year. Through June 30th, 2025, total customs revenue, including tariffs, taxes, and fees, is reported at $106.1 billion, with $81.5 billion specifically from tariffs imposed since January 20th, 2025. Projections suggest that tariff revenue could reach $260.4 billion to $300 billion by the end of 2025. Driven by policies like a 10% baseline tariff on most imports and a 30% tariff on Chinese goods, these figures represent gross tariff revenue, with net revenue typically being 80 to 85% of gross after accounting for refunds and offsets. These numbers highlight the significant impact the 2025 tariff policies, though they remain a small fraction of the federal budget deficit projected at $1.9 trillion for fiscal year 2025. So it is chipping away at that, but there's still work to be done. Could you imagine if we didn't have that tariff revenue? So when these were instituted, it was doom and gloom, the sky is falling. And then as we moved from month to month, we are told by Democrats mostly, well, just wait. We'll just wait. Oh, it's coming. Just wait. Well, no. Yeah, I know there was great agreements there. I mean, the stock market is skyrocketing today. Basically on the extension of the agreement with China, which is going to need to be worked out. And hopefully it is behind the scenes. Because if you keep giving them extensions, China is going to keep taking advantage of that. But with a high-level meeting this week with Putin, even if Trump goes there, meets with him, and walks away and says, listen, he doesn't want a deal, that's it. It's that face-to-face meeting is good. The fact that Trump says, I'll know very shortly into the meeting. Hopefully, if he sees that, and he should just walk away. Say, you're not here seriously. I'm done here. And walk away. I think that would send a clear message. Here, back to home again. Council considers waiving Luzerne County Council. Considers waiving residency requirement for county administrators. Yep, Luzerne County Council plans to vote on an ordinance today to waive a residency requirement for selected administrative positions if an employee has at least 5 years of continued county employment. The residency requirement for top administrators took effect in 2016. All division heads, the sheriff, the heads of emergency management, and 911 are required to live in the county. The proposed ordinance says the residency requirement has hindered the recruitment, selection, and retention of candidates from the aforementioned positions in county government. But I don't get that because it says you have to work for the county for 5 years, so it's still not going to help with the recruitment, selection, and retention, maybe. If you're living and working in the county and you're making policy for the county, I think it's a bad look if you want to flee the county at that point. But I don't know how this helps recruitment of new department heads, because they'd have to work in the county for 5 years in order to be affected by this. County Council passed a residency requirement in March of 2016 by a 6-5 vote. The county has 8 executive branch divisions: administrative services, operational services, judicial services and records, correctional services, budget and financial services, human services, public defender's office, and the office of law. Now, the county has not replaced Jennifer Pecora, the head of operational service, since she resigned in January. The proposed ordinance waiving the residency requirement may increase the pool of applicants interested in the job as head of operational services. Again, right in the beginning of this story, it says that if an employee has at least 5 years of continued county employment, that they'll be able to waive residency requirement. So I don't get how this helps someone coming in. Okay, you can come in, live here for 5 years, and then you can move. Listen, I've lived where I live now for almost 22 years. I'm not moving next time. I'm abandoning. Moving sucks. So I don't know how you draw people here to saying, well, you have to live in the county for 5 years, and then you can move. That's not a draw or attraction to me. So I'm not really sure where this goes, but if you're a Luzerne County resident, you want to get to your meeting tonight, not sure what much of a say you'll have in it or which direction this is going in, but they plan to vote on the ordinance tonight. But the way this is written, I don't see how it benefits them as far as attracting new blood from out of the area coming in, because it says that you waive residence requirement for selected administrative positions if an employee has at least 5 years of continued county employment. Don't know. We'll see where it goes. It's coming up on the 4 o'clock hour here. It is, my temperature is still reading 93 degrees. It was nice and sunny when I came in, but 4 o'clock here at WILK.